is SMC. If it's about school marketing and communications, you'll find it here. It's Insight Applied.
Hello, school marketers, and welcome to SMC. If it's about school marketing and communications, we'll talk about it here. I'm Charlie Morn, and this is episode 149 for Wednesday, February the 6th, 2019. It's our second podcast. We've been allowed back in the room, and with me is Rita and Tess. How are you both?
Good to be here, Charlie. Thank goodness it's a second round. Yep, we get another chance. Round.
Hello, everyone. Glad to be back.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And to our first piece of news that you can use comes from the Educator magazine, which is Australia's educational magazine for professionals and key decision makers. And the author is Brett Hennebury, who comes to us with a bit of an article on a teacher who is in the States who was fired over the use of her own personal Twitter account in her own time. And this actually got us talking about teachers and as well as students and their use of social media in their own time, what it comes down to in terms of the social media policies for the schools and what it actually means for school marketers. So Tess, as a teacher, you were in this setup where you're actually kind of looking, you're getting ads from people that you were teaching.
Yeah, this is a really interesting area for me. As a teacher, I found that especially when you're dealing with younger parents, they're more used to communicating through text messages, through Messenger. And it's really important to have that social media policy in place, not only for the school marketer to not have so many situations to deal with, but just for the teachers to know what to do.
Yeah.
And also to know how to navigate parent communications that come through that way without obviously harming the relationship in some way.
Absolutely. It's a really tricky area because it's moving so fast. And it's, I mean, Brett sort of says in this article that, well, I'm not sure whether he says it, but or whether someone he was referencing says that he thinks the problem's a generational thing. I mean, we've got teachers now who are sort of social media sort of natives. And then we've also got parents who are coming through who are expecting communication to come back and forth through the channels that suit them best. Rita, does this come down to sort of a governance issue on a higher scale?
I think it does. I mean, really, it is most largely a governance issue, but it's something certainly that marketers or people managing the social media posts in any school or college need to be across, because they are essentially the person that are monitoring all the comments, all the engagement, all the activity and the interactions. So they really need to know what is appropriate and what isn't, when to act, when to not, and to pass that relevant information onto the principal or whoever is responsible for the governance. So it is interesting. I mean, I have to say, I'm definitely glad that I grew up with social media when I was in school, because everything that you do in your personal life has become a lot more connected to your professional life. I mean, even when you consider if you're going for a job, if you don't have very strict privacy settings on your Facebook, et cetera, that everything you do is visible. And that certainly has merged into people's professional lives now as well.
Yeah. The other thing to think about is your teachers are an extension of your brand. So really making sure that they understand that in the social media policy, and they understand that whatever is posted is by extension part of the school brand, and having that media crisis management plan in place is also key for when things don't quite go to plan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do help a lot of schools with sort of crisis media management and that kind of thing. But I mean, I guess the idea of having that social media policy there from the start is that you never get to that point. People have very clear understandings of communication. And ideally, we're actually talking to parents, not just teachers, about what the expectations are on themselves as well as their children in terms of social media use within schools and that kind of thing.
Yeah, completely. And again, even though it is very much a governance and code of conduct issue, I think it's really important that marketers are aware of how they should be reacting, how to deal with, you know, a potential crisis or preventing something from becoming a crisis, and knowing what to look for. So again, it comes back to having that awareness of what the social media policy is, and everyone having that awareness in the community when you're using social media.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because you can't really stop change. So if it's an easier way of communicating, people will find a way to do it. So schools do need to provide some kind of platform where they can easily communicate in real time.
All right. So if you want to get in touch, or if you want to do a bit of research into getting a social media policy, it's definitely something we'd advise, so that hopefully something like this doesn't come around to your school. So to our next piece of news that you can use, an opinion piece from Mark Ritson, who was writing in the Marketing Week, talking about Facebook's move to becoming closer and closer to absorbing that brand that is Instagram. Now, as we all know, that Facebook owns Instagram. It was a pretty public purchase, I think, back in 2012. But we know that our school marketers are looking at ways to better engage with their community. From our school marketing and social media survey that we did last year, we had sort of a very high number of participants respond that they were going to increase their usage in Instagram, which is obviously something that we've been advocating here for a while because we think it's a really good, great platform, but not necessarily for all schools, but on general, we think it's a good platform. But this opinion piece is really talking about the back end of Facebook starting to hopefully not take away too many things that make Instagram unique, but it does seem to be looking that way. So from that survey, we saw that only 3% actively adopt new platforms. So we know that school marketers on general are quite skeptical about new platforms. They sit on the fence and kind of wait to see what happens, which is completely understandable given the nature of schools and their brands. However, it's the back end that we're looking at in terms of the setup and the, and as well as the billing, if we're starting to look at advertising. Something that we do a lot of is looking after the business managers for Facebook as well as, well, it looks like Instagram's moving that way. So, I mean, Rita, I'm going to throw to you. I mean, the importance of having all your cards, your ducks in a row to make sure that everything's set up accordingly. And quite now we've had those features that we can have agencies set up as partners rather than personal accounts. It's just part of housekeeping, isn't it?
Agreed. And, you know, it's funny because as social media evolves, I think a lot of people are really finding their way, maneuvering around them and what the best way of using them is. It does definitely come back to if you're going to use a social media platform, do it well, particularly with something like Instagram, which is very visually driven, a lot more so than Facebook. I think it's extremely important that if you're going to, you know, use imagery, photography, that you do it right, because it actually can be more detrimental if you're not using the platform efficiently. But I certainly see the merits in integrating the two platforms so that it makes it a lot easier to utilize them.
Yeah, I mean, I think from what I can see on that as well is that with Instagram, that I think because it's such a visual platform, and we've spoken about this, I've heard this on many SMCs before, that schools are blessed with great quality content and there's always an event going on. There's always something to capture and something to share. But I suppose it is using that platform strategically and not just making it another Facebook, because they are separate platforms, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. I think the real challenge here is going to be for school marketers to be treating those two platforms as very unique platforms with different audiences that are looking for different things. And the more the back end is integrated, the more you start thinking of it as the same platform. So I think that's going to be a real test to make sure that people are treating each one uniquely.
Yeah, absolutely. So now onto our final piece of news that you can use. Comes from Alyssa Shearer, and this is from the Pew Research Center in the States. And this came out December last year. And it was a report to say that social media outpaces print news in the US as the primary news source for participants. And we generally know that trends start in the States and then roll over across the world. So I think from our own observations, we've seen that there's been a steady increase in the reliance of social media as a primary news source. But I mean, for me now, looking at it for school marketers, is this the end of print? Is this what we're saying, that social media is now the one and only truth?
Very foreboding there, Charlie. I disagree.
Finally, we've got a disagreement. We've been brainstorming about this for so long.
This was not pre-planned. Yes, look, I mean, I personally use social media to access news. I follow a lot of newspapers online because I find it a lot more accessible. It's the first thing I do in the morning. But that said, I certainly disagree that newspaper or print is dead. I think it's about the approach. So rather than advertising, for example, or announcing events in a newspaper just on an ad hoc basis, making sure that you're accessing features that are relevant to education. So you could have choosing your school, how to rate your school. You know that the readership is very relevant because it's education driven. So I think just being smarter with where and what features you're utilizing to advertise.
Okay, so you can be in some very specific sort of publications, but schools are on tight budgets, that we need some more ROI. We need to get a bit of an understanding of what the data is showing us. So what's print offering us with such a high cost per sheet?
Budget is important. You're trying to catch me out here, Charlie. Budget is definitely important, but there's no reason why you can't use several different platforms, because again, as we know, social media can be extremely economical as well. But I do think a combination of different platforms where you know that there's a lot of readership and it's extremely relevant to the theme or the topic, or the specific feature. It all does depend on your budget, but I think it definitely has its place.
Look, I'm going to sound like a dinosaur now, but I miss the days of buying the Saturday paper and just spending.
I still do.
Okay, that's good. I don't feel so bad now. You know, just sitting down and reading the stories and getting a balanced view of the world. So the point I'd like to raise is the ethical dilemma of news being delivered through a platform that's driven by an algorithm to show you what you already think and what you're already doing on that platform. Mm. So there's another angle to this as well is, you know, will your content even be shown to people unless they're already wanting to see that content?
Yeah, I suppose the angle that you're looking at for me personally in terms of print is that there's a certain prestige that still comes from being in print. There's something about, I saw the article in the paper, or I saw that advertorial or whatever it was. There's some gravitas that comes with actually holding something in your hands that you don't quite get with social media because it does, I guess, scroll and then it's gone kind of feeling. But I'd play to your point that, well, if you'll probably be buying the same kind of newspaper that aligns with your own views. So it's probably been going on far longer than social media.
So are we agreeing or disagreeing on this one?
I don't know.
I think agreeing to disagree.
I think it comes back to the point that we seem to be making in all of our podcasts, is that it's going to come down to the school, that we know that print traditionally now is getting the highest readership is in the 65 plus. That's where what the data is showing us. But I think it comes down to the school. If your community, you know, there's a very sort of prominent local community paper that you know a lot of people are reading, then absolutely it makes sense. But we're always looking at the efficiency versus the price and looking whether we can actually get our message in front of the people that count. So I think it's going to come back to it depends.
It depends. I mean, one thing that's really important to note or just to be mindful of as well is that a lot of newspapers have also had to evolve with the online platforms. So very often you will have newspapers that may offer you a full page advert, a quarter page advert, and also a digital package for their microsites or for their website. So they're also adapting to that so that they're offering not just print, but also the digital aspect as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I think that's enough news for now.
This is SMC. It's insight applied.
And so to our marketing example, and we are now going to start talking about SEO, so search engine optimization strategies for your website, specifically talking about WordPress. And this article comes from John Rampton, and the article was seen in Forbes' website. WordPress is certainly a platform that we know a lot of schools use, but we're going to talk very generally about very low-hanging fruit that school marketers can get a hold of to improve their search engine optimization. And we obviously know that if you're wanting to get something buried, you put it onto the second page of Google. So the things that we can look at in terms of improving very quickly how we rank, things like keywords. So making sure that the optimized keywords that we want are not overly littered through the website, but we know that we need to have them in there. So if you're saying XYZ sort of girls' school in wherever, then you know that you need to have that kind of language in your website so that people who are searching for your school, it will come up in Google. I mean, what else can we really say other than that?
Yeah, that's a really key one for school marketers. I think it's really easy when you work in a school to only think about what your internal objectives are and forget actually what your prospective parents are searching for. So you've got these great free tools accessible to you. You've got your keyword research tool in Google Ads, the Google Search Console to assess how you're doing as far as SEO goes on your website. Use them. Google will prompt you to do certifications because they want you to be good at this because they want people to search through Google. So there's definitely some low-hanging fruit there. But don't forget your prospective parents. I think you can get really buried in school terminology and what you're trying to achieve internally.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a great place as well to be looking at your key messaging. So yes, you've got those keywords that you need to have throughout your site, but also your website is your owned property. That's where you want to be making sure that it really is your brand through and through, and looking at your key messaging regularly, or whether it ties in with your strategic plan, making sure that that language is emanating through everything. Every single page has some sort of theme. That's kind of what we're advocating.
Yeah, that's true. And I think it's important to find that balance between keywords and the copy and the language that you're using on the website, because I have come across, interestingly enough, a lot of websites over the years where there's an overemphasis on SEO and the copy and the messaging is actually lost. So that's something to be really aware of, is that not to let the keywords take over so that you've got repetition through the copy, that it actually makes sense and it's user friendly.
Yeah, absolutely. And this, I should state that this is a topic for, I'm sure that there are podcasts out there dedicated to this entire topic, but we will be getting one of our colleagues, Christian, in at some point in the coming podcast. And we're going to do a bumper episode on websites. We'll talk about SEO and other sort of best practice things to be looking out for, but we're just glazing over the sort of the top level at the moment. Obviously making sure that pages or blogs have the right kind of content and the right content length. If you've got a very text heavy page, then it's going to take a long time for bots to crawl through that and actually get a sense for whether that's the right article, the right page to be showing to your, well, to their searches. And then the other thing that we would probably say as an easy win is installing a plugin such as Yoast for WordPress or something similar. But I mean, Tess, this is where, in the school marketing sense, that there's actually, it's not just a product. It's not just a single service. There are multifaceted elements to this that really a plugin needs to be upping its game to actually be sharing your keywords.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what's really important to remember here is Google is getting more and more sophisticated. So you don't actually need exact matches for keywords or phrases anymore. Google can piece it together and work out exactly what topics you are an authority on. So I think that's the key, a key takeaway here is, what are you an expert on? What content will you write about? And then how do you structure that in the back end so it makes it easier for Google to find that content and connect them together? One of my little issues with Yoast plugin, I love it. Don't get me wrong. It's like a little game that you just
keep. Yoast, are you listening?
We're not sponsored by them, I swear.
Yeah, exactly.
But they don't optimize for multiple keywords yet. And I think that's really important because SEO in 2019 now is more about words, phrases, and variations on your main topic. So that's a really key thing to measure.
And surely, I mean, parents will be coming into the buying process for schools. They'll probably be searching for very different things. They're not just going to be searching for great education. They're going to be searching for sport opportunities, music opportunities. How do I raise my son? How do I raise my daughter? What's boarding like? Tell me about the International Baccalaureate. There are so many things that go into the school as a service that you can't just have one.
Absolutely.
One keyword.
And I think, I mean, this is going into another area, but you've got to think about what stage of the customer journey that prospective parent is on. If it's awareness content, don't brand it. Don't start talking about your school over and over in that piece of content. Just try to solve their problem and stick to the topic.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And now we move on to our rants and raves. And last week we were ranting about ATAR, but this time, well, I think it's a rave. We're going to be talking about a very fun ad that was actually run during the Lions. So we're talking about rugby union now, when the Lions traveled to New Zealand to play the All Blacks. So we're going back a couple of years. Apologies, I am a rugby fan, but I, funnily enough, didn't actually bring this example forward. But it's actually looking at a campaign run by APN Outdoor. And the link will be in the show notes. But essentially, Guinness and Steinlager, who were the main sponsors of that tour, they went out and they purchased all of the smart screens in all of the airports throughout New Zealand, because they knew that being a tour, that people would be flying in and out all the different airports all around the country for this sort of 2-3 week period. So they did this incredible campaign. I'll let you watch it, but essentially it was sort of a claim your territory, stand in front of a smart screen, and depending on which color jersey you were wearing, the smart screen would change accordingly. So the idea being that your team could come to an airport and take over that airport, and they would become your territory. So yes, big brands, big budgets, but I think this is perfect. This is the kind of creative level that is going to drive things forward. And we're talking about schools. We're talking about exciting educational things where there are some great futures and potentials and possibilities for your children. So I think this is perfect. I think this is exactly what schools should be looking at.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. I mean, I personally like to follow all these creative ads that are out just to get ideas for our clients, because as Charlie mentioned, they would have had a phenomenal budget that most schools and colleges certainly don't have. But that said, there's no price on creativity. So thinking outside the box and coming up with an unusual idea that grabs people's attention and vitally engages, that there's interaction between your prospective clients or customers. If there's some level of engagement, that really creates a buzz around the product. And that's, there's no price on that. That's something that when you get in that frame of mind, you can do.
Yeah, I think really the fun is somehow with a very limited budget, getting really creative and seeing if you can integrate that across different platforms. So integrate it offline, maybe in shopping centers or through a real-time radio plug of some sort, and then using Facebook, Google Ads to then back that up.
Yeah, I mean, there are times like this in terms of campaigns that, I mean, a back to school campaign, you know, a lot of parents and a lot of families are going to be out. They're going to be out of shopping centers or whatever it is, or they might be going back into commuting. You know that there are these certain times where you're going to get a high footfall, higher than normal of this demographic who are thinking about school. They're out there shopping for things about school, that maybe that's an opportunity for you to go, you know what, we're going to do a really targeted campaign.
That's it. And that's where timing and planning comes into it. So what's really important for schools to be mindful of is, when are my main events over the course of the year, and plan well in advance so that the timing makes sense and you will have a lot more impact as a campaign.
Absolutely.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
So that almost brings us to the end of episode 149 of SMC. Now, one thing that you will have noticed is that next episode is episode 150, and we hope to do a panel Q&A. So if you have any questions whatsoever when it comes down to school marketing, then please email us at smc@image7.com.au. If you're listening to this, then hopefully you subscribe to our e-newsletter, and there should be a link in there to link you to a little survey where you can just enter in your question, and we'll hopefully debate that on the podcast next episode. So if you're listening to this from the Image 7 website, so why not pop over to your favorite podcast player for your fortnightly dose of school marketing and communications goodness. Search for SMC School Marketing and Communications. Well, that's it for this episode of SMC as we approach episode 150. From Rita, Tess, and myself, Charlie, bye for now.
Bye.
Thank you. See you next time.